This is Wyman and Bob
on Seattle Sports, powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the Seattle Sports app and at seattlesports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Welcome, everybody. It's Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710 and seattlesports.com. Happy Tuesday to everybody out there. Beautiful day once again outside. We got Mariner baseball happening. We'll turn you over to the Mariners pregame show coming up at 4 o'clock. A very important series coming up with the Texas Rangers, who are sitting in front of the Mariners in the AL West. So game one coming your way this afternoon. I left part of that story out about Jared Goff. At the end of it, it said, oh, by the way, bleep you, Wyman. So, yeah.
That's the 253.
Jared is in his he was able to squeeze that in while talking about Detroit media.
You know what? I've had a huge turnaround with Jared Goff.
Have you?
Yeah, well, I mean, he was a Cal guy, and he was just dopey. And now he gets to Detroit and takes his team to the playoffs. I mean, yeah, I think I've turned around on him.
Okay.
So, yeah, he deserves to say bleep me.
I just like that he was able to squeeze it in amongst the conversations about Detroit meeting. He's still thinking about you.
He said something about you being their favorite best fan
That's right.
Of all time.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And his shout out to Bob Stelton, longtime Lions fan.
Yeah.
So good
According
to hear from
to the
Jared
professor.
Goff. That's right. Yeah. That's right. So we'll take you up to 4 o'clock today. You guys can text in 866-979-3776, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. We are just a couple of days away from the NFL draft. It'll finally be here. We will be on the air, wall-to-wall coverage, live from the Virginia Mason Athletic Center, so don't miss a minute of it. We will have you covered on all the moves that may happen, may not happen, as we sit right now. In case you weren't up to speed, the Seattle Seahawks have 7 picks. We'll see if John Schneider wheels and deals and turns that into 8, 9, 10, 11 picks. Who knows? But right now you got 7. And looking at this, this is all going to be subjective based on how you view this team as it sits right now. But just for everybody out there, as you look at this Seahawks team, and you identify, in your opinion, the holes that they have.
Yeah.
Do they have enough draft picks to fill the holes you see on this team? And again, that's assuming all of these draft picks make the team and become impactful in some way. Obviously, you want your number one pick or your first round pick to have a different level of impact than round 7. The expectation is different. But if you think they've got more than 7 holes on this team, certainly you're going to need all of these guys to come through and free agents. But do you feel like that's the question for you guys to answer? Do you feel like they've got enough draft picks to fill the holes that you see on the Seahawks roster? What do you say, Dave?
Yeah, well, first of all, yes, I think they do if you're drafting for position, but they're not going to draft, by position. They're going to draft, where is the best? We can create competition. Remember, that's what Pete used to talk about all the time, that these guys are going to come in and they're going to compete, and that's what you want. You want it to be a difficult decision at the end of the year, because if it's not, you're like, okay, well, maybe this guy, maybe somebody can replace him, or we can get a free agent somewhere or trade for him. But, that there's a big difference there. So, and I'm just looking at some of the positions just as an example. So you look at the linebacker position, and I'm talking about second level. I'm not talking about the outside rushers, because if you put Uchenna's healthy and you put Boye Mafe out there, those are two solid, proven pros. And then you've got Daryl Taylor, who's a little bit of a question mark. You've got Derek Hall, who is a question mark because he came off a rookie year. I expect him to make that jump. But, but if you look at the second level guys, really, I mean, other than guys like John Rattigan and this kid O'Connell, you've got Baker and Dodson. Now, Tyrell Dodson had 15 starts. 15 starts. So, I mean, that guy is not a proven player. Jerome Baker and both these guys, they signed to one-year deals. He's got 82 starts. So, I mean, I'm okay with that one, But when you look at Dodson, he's still a project.
Yeah, and these are the guys you brought in, presumably to replace Jordan Brooks, Bobby Wagner.
Right.
You did get rid of Devin Bush. So, feels like you still got work to do at that position.
Yeah, so I think that's a good example of, they have guys there. Another one would be safety. So, and I brought this up to Moyer, and I'm like, maybe the depth is lacking there. He's like, well, they actually have depth, which they do. Because if you go and look at, they have bodies.
There are names there. There are people.
Yes.
But are they good? Are they guys that you look at and say they are going to make this a better team? Or are they just occupying a spot right now?
Well, Mike Lefko and I were talking about this before the show that, you know, really the way Mike put it, and I agree, you have one safety, and that's Julian Love. Because other than that, you have Jarek Reed, who is coming off of a, I'd say one and a half, okay? Rayshon Jenkins has actually played a good amount. He's got 80 starts in the league. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you hope that it works out, but we don't really know about him. Kayvon Wallace, the other guy that they signed, he has like 19 games that he's played in. You know, and then you got Jarek Reed, who's coming off of a rookie year. And then you've got the sort of whisper of Jonathan Sutherland, the strong safety, 5'11", 202 pounds. He's a Penn State guy. He's been on the roster since last year, and everybody's raving about, you know, how good he is in practice. You got Ty Okada. So, yeah, you have depth there. You wouldn't say, okay, we don't really have a safety, but that's a project right now. So, you know, if you – with the, you know, the third round pick, 2 fourths, 2 sixths, and a seventh, you know, try to get a safety in there. That would be one of those if you're drafting by need for position.
So when you look at the depth chart and you see a bunch of names, I mean, again, there are names there, but whether they're going to be anybody that has any impact or even make this team is a completely different conversation. Did it change your opinion as to which positions are in most need?
Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, you look at safety, look at linebacker. You know, I would throw also in there, tight end. I mean, Tyler Mabry is a guy that I've been clinging to since the pandemic.
Is he still on the roster?
He's still on the practice squad. And I'm like, I'm waiting for this guy to pop because I looked at him when he was in college, when they signed him as a free agent, because he went back. I'm trying to remember if it was one way or the other, but he was either at Maryland for a really long time or Buffalo for a really long time. And then he went for his senior year, I think it was, to Maryland, and he didn't have a very good year. He ends up not getting drafted, but he's a good player. I mean, you look at him in college, he's a great blocker. But again, you know, that's just a body. Same thing with Farrell Brown. It's the other guy that they got.
They just signed.
Yeah, and he's supposedly a monster blocker. You know, really good blocking tight end, but... You know, and then you throw center in there. I mean, look, I don't want to dismiss everyone because, like, Olu, to me, what he should do is make that second-year jump and become the solid starter. You know, rookie year, he got out there a little bit. He had a couple of highlights. He had a block on the goal line when they scored against Detroit that was really good, showed some flashes. But, you know, he needs to take that next step. And so that's the kind of the part of it when you look at almost any – roster construction. I mean, you look at what, you know, you're expecting guys like Derek Hall and Olu to take that second year leap.
Yeah.
You have to count on that. Now, and that happens all the time.
The way they've approached center so far makes me feel like they are expecting Olu to take that step. Now, we don't know what they're going to do with the draft. Maybe they draft another center. Who knows? I mean, but they bring in another Evan Brown type, a guy who's kind of a journeyman I think he signed a 1-year deal as well.
Yeah.
Veteran. It feels like, hey, this is our depth guy in case the rookie gets hurt or doesn't live up to what we're hoping.
Right.
He's insurance. I mean, you need depth there anyway, but it doesn't feel like they went out to find a guy to legitimately compete. Like, the expectation is him. Yeah. He is expected to be your center.
Right.
Is how I view it from the outside. They could have a completely different view of that spot.
Yeah. Well, and for fans and for you and I mean, we're sitting here looking at it going, okay, we're counting on Olu to be that center. It does happen all the time, but also it doesn't happen all the time.
Yeah. I mean, he's a fifth rounder. There's no, I think we've learned at this point not to look at what round somebody's been drafted in to assess potential to, right? I mean, Brock Purdy taught everybody that lesson, and we learned it with Chris Carson, who was a seventh round pick, and Richard Sherman, fifth round pick. So we've learned that lesson here about, all right, first rounder, it does carry expectation, but the idea that just because somebody's a fifth rounder, all right, if they wash out, he's a fifth rounder. No. Yeah. You've got a lot of success in those late rounds, so I won't hold that against him.
Yeah, I agree. And I think Olu, you know, he was maybe kind of a disappointment last year, but he was a rookie. I mean, you know, I just was hoping that he was going to be a guy that came in. He's a really smart player and, you know, that he's going to be able to take over that center job. And by the end of his rookie year,
he won really all the awards, too. That was the other part. And I talked a bunch about, you know, the Outland Trophy and the Remington Trophy. Is that it?
Yeah, Remington is interior offensive line.
Yeah. In the Outland, I mean, he was, you know, being awarded as the best center in college football by virtue of these awards, yet he was a fifth-round pick.
And right.
They're going, why is that the deal?
Yeah, that was, I remember talking about that, and yeah, it didn't really make sense. And, you know, a lot of people probably thought, wow, this guy's a second round draft choice at least. So, you know, according to the awards that he won. But yeah, I mean, that one, maybe him and Derek Hall from last year, I hoped that by the end of the year, they both were, I wanted Olu to be starting. I wanted Derek Hall to be starting to show like Boye did his rookie year. Boye Mafe. You know, and Derek Hall, actually, the very last game, he played really well. He played well in the Arizona game. He made some special team plays. He was starting to come around. So hopefully, you know, that will be the case. But, yeah, whenever you look at your roster construction and nobody – it's like when we talk about offensive line. There's nobody in any NFL city that goes, all five starters on our offensive line are just rock solid.
Right.
There's always one guy or two guys. So, yeah, there's going to be some question marks. But, you know, they do have the bodies. They've gone and gotten them in free agency. But, you know, like I said, especially when you look at safety, Kayvon Wallace, I mean, he's played 19 games in like 4 years. You know, Rayshon Jenkins, you actually look at him, he's got 80 starts in the league. So, I mean, that's pretty solid. Jerome Baker with his 80 starts, that's pretty solid. You like to count on those guys, but you still don't know because they haven't played here yet.
One name that was brought up, Joseph in the 360, brought up Mike Morris, who we didn't see last year.
I just saw his name on the roster, and I was like, yeah, that was another guy.
Yeah.
He was hurt.
Fifth round, was he the pick right in front of Olu or two picks?
Maybe.
They were right there. They were either back-to-back or within a couple picks of each other.
I remember when they were interviewing him, I think Olu got drafted.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So.
But we don't have any idea what he brings to the table. Obviously, we didn't see a moment of him last year.
Exactly. So, yeah, I mean, look, there's always going to be those kinds of position groups that, you know, but like we're not talking about receiver. Right. I mean, we feel pretty good about.
I wouldn't think so. Which
four guys
if
you got
we dismiss,
there?
if we dismiss any position out of hand, they are going to draft somebody in that spot. If we say they're good at receiver, they're going to draft a receiver.
Yeah.
If we say that about running back, they're going to draft a running back just to make you and I look foolish, Dave. That's what they're going to do.
Yeah. Why do they do that? Why do they have to do that? Why does John do that? He talks to us. But yeah, I mean, I was just looking at a couple of receivers. I know. Bo Nix, he threw 14 touchdowns to Troy Franklin. He's a pretty high prospect. And then there's a kid at South Carolina, Xavier Leggett. And he's just a big dude. He reminds me of Anquan Boldin. Just a 6 foot, 222-pound guy that, you know, can just fly. So, yeah, I mean, expect one of those guys to get drafted, right? Because we're so solid at wide receiver.
Yeah, yeah, exactly right. Exactly right. I won't dismiss any position out of hand. I'll be curious to see what happens. I saw this story, and we talked about all the mock drafts we've looked at. There's a million of them, and some have trades in them, some don't. A couple of the trades I've seen have the Eagles trading up with the Seahawks. Now, that could be complete happenstance there, but then I saw this story last night, report, Eagles GM Howie Roseman is making calls about trading up in the first round. So I'm going, okay, well, maybe there is something to it. Now, maybe he wants to go further than 16, wants to go high. I don't know who they're targeting, but do you connect the two at all, or is that, do you look at that as just kind of happenstance? Yeah, it's been in a bunch of mock drafts, but that's people just kind of guessing, or do you think they're hearing things? I'm wondering if there's some connection between the Eagles, who pick at number 22, and the Seahawks at 16.
Yeah, I think Howie Roseman, I think John is pretty familiar with the way that he operates, and he's the GM for Philly. And, yeah, I mean, maybe that makes it a little bit more likely just because they have that relationship and nothing's going to be, you know, a mystery or anything. You know exactly what Howie Roseman's all about. But yeah, I mean, if they trade back, I would be okay. It's going to be really boring if they trade out of the first round. So
yeah.
I'm hoping not.
Yeah, just for entertainment's sake.
I just hope that somebody that they think is a top 10 pick falls to number 16. And I think this draft, and maybe it's Faltanu. You know, maybe that guy is ranked that high. He's incredibly athletic. Mm-hmm. We looked at him yesterday. But if that happens, and you know, I just hope that there's somebody there for them, like Latu, or Fautanu or possibly Panix. I mean, I do feel like there's going to be, I think in particular this year, there's going to be sort of a panic as far as the quarterbacks go. Because Bo Nix, and we'll talk about him at 2:30, you look at that guy and the numbers that he put up and, you know, what he's done. He's 24 years old, and he's not supposedly a first-rounder. I mean, I feel like somebody is going to grab him and that the, all six of those guys are going to end up going possibly before the Seahawks even get a pick.
Yeah, I that wouldn't be surprising. It wouldn't be surprising. This other story I saw from CBS Sports, and I'm curious what your level of interest would be in any of these guys because it says – it's a story. It says Brandon Ayuk, T. Higgins, amongst other players with uncertain futures who could impact the first round. Basically, they said any one of these players could be sent to a new team on day one of the draft because some are contract situations. And, you know, we're talking receivers. So Ayuk and Higgins probably are not something the Seahawks would be kicking the tires on. I guess you never know. But you have Patrick Surtain.
Which is also probably a position that you don't really need.
Yeah. Obviously, Daniel Jones, quarterback. Cortland Sutton, another wide receiver. Now, here's the one that caught my eye. Ryan Ramczyk, offensive tackle for New Orleans. But they're saying his knee is not recovering as quickly as the Saints had hoped, leaving them on an island when figuring out the tackle position. Trevor Penning was benched 6 games into last season. Ramczyk admitted himself that the cartilage in his knee has deteriorated. You'd never like hearing that.
No.
But they talk about the idea that he could be moved, and he was the only one that I looked at in there and going, okay. I remember him obviously from the draft, and there were fans that wanted the Seahawks to take him. Any of these guys you look at and go, yeah, maybe they would kick the tires on this guy, or are they all out?
Yeah, well, I mean, I'd be with you on Ramczyk, but I mean, I think once again, John Schneider is very picky about the medicals.
Yeah,
you know, and if you've got deterioration anywhere in the sentence that you're describing his health, that's not good.
That's a bad word.
Yeah, 101 starts for him though, drafted in 2017, but. Yeah, I don't know. I just don't think – I feel like it's going to be kind of the theme is, hey, we're starting over. You know, I don't want to bring up Picturegate, but, like, it's a new deal. We're going to get younger players in here, and we're going to kind of – I don't want to say start over, but we're going to – you know, we're going to go – now, again, just as soon as I say this, they will end up trading and, you know, getting a player like that. But I think for the most part – I think we're going to see them sit there at 16 and take a pick.
You don't think they'll trade out of that spot?
Well, I'm hoping if my plan works out, Bob, where all the quarterbacks get drafted, including Bo Nix, then all of a sudden one of those players that could be in the top, you know, 10 or 15
falls to you.
Like Brock Bowers or Fautanu.
Have you shared your plan with the rest of the league?
Well, I got to talk to John first and see what he thinks about it.
But, see if he can get you in contact with all the other GMs.
Yeah,
so you can influence at least all the first 15 picks.
Yeah. No, there's some really exciting players. I mean, and going through and doing these profiles that we've been talking about, all these guys, I get excited about these guys.
They all look like superstars in the making.
Yeah. They absolutely do. And that happens all the time. Like I said, I mean, look, the draft is a huge crapshoot. It really is. I mean, anything from injury to the guy's personality, which I don't think that's going to get in the way. I feel like they've tightened things up as far as that goes. They're taking really good guys. I don't think they're taking chances. I think Pete was more likely. And this is one thing I really admire about Pete. He was all about giving guys a second chance.
Gave a lot of guys chances.
Yeah, and it worked out. It worked out for some of the guys. And you know, and I've always admired that about Pete. That, but I think it would be much more likely to happen that you would get a guy that's maybe on the borderline. Not because Pete's bad at it. It's because I think Pete is so willing to give guys a second chance, and I love that about Pete.
All right, let's take two.
Mariners and Rangers lineups are out. Some interesting notes for both of them. Cal Raleigh still in the three spot. Worked out well on Sunday night against the Rockies. Luke Rayleigh gets to start in left. And Mitch Garver, in his return to Texas, DHing and batting seventh. And the Rangers have activated Jonah Heim from the bereavement list. He missed 2 games on that list. He's back in their lineup hitting 8.
Waiting for Luke Rayleigh to get going. See what he brings to the table. To this point, it's not much.
I haven't looked up. How tall is he?
I'm going to guess 6'4", 6'5". He's a tall dude.
And it looks like he's not super quick, but like once he gets going, he can put him down.
Yeah, he's a big guy. You feel like, you know, he's capable. It just hasn't happened to this point. He hasn't played a ton, but he's hitting an even 200 at this point with a 222 on base. So we'll see. He's listed at 6'4", 235.
Yeah, he's one of those big dudes. It looks like arms and legs are going everywhere when he's running. But, I'm starting to get to the point. The more I look at this roster that the Rangers have, I'm like, I'd take one win.
Especially considering they had none last year.
Yeah.
Well, there was some talk leading up to the Super Bowl that Andy Reid might retire if the Chiefs won. But he's not going anywhere because the Chiefs announced contract extensions for Reid, GM Brett Veach, and team president Mark Donovan.
Is that the easiest decision that Kansas City's ever had? Should we keep Andy Reid around? Should we extend him? Yeah. Okay, let's go to lunch.
Let me give you an extra few million dollars we're at it.
That's the biggest no-brainer in sports right there. Yeah, what has he won, 3 Super Bowls there, I think? Is it 2 or 3? I think he's got 3.
He's got 3?
Yeah, he's won 3. They've been to, what, 4 and 6 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and I also, Brett Veach does a really good job. Their GM.
Seems like their whole front office does a good job.
Yeah.
I mean,
the only thing about them, though, that was kind of shocking to hear is that, you know, as far as their facility and treatment of players and stuff like
grades.
That, the grades were pretty low for Kansas City.
Very low.
Which is weird. But that was the one where they provided lunch on Wednesdays, and that was it. They brought in lunch for the players.
Did they have to buy it the other days, or it just wasn't even available?
I think it wasn't available. Yeah, which is just, and look, that's not everything. I mean, oh, big deal. I mean, we used to go through it with the Seahawks. We would all order from Tice's Deli, or else people would, you know, bring stuff in Tupperware or whatever and sit at your locker and eat. But look at the difference between that. I mean, they're actually going back in time, like 30 years. That's how it happened when I was playing. And
these are billionaires that own these teams. This is a money-making machine, every one of these teams.
Yeah.
And the idea that we're going to charge players for a lunch, or we're going to give them a lunch on this day and the other days they don't, I don't know. It just seems really weird.
Well, and also down there at the VMAC, as Paul Moyer points out, everything's organic.
That's exactly right.
So, I mean, they're honestly, they're feeding them good food. They don't put crap out there. I mean, there's some sweet stuff, I guess, but for the most part, everything they make is really good. And we've eaten down there, and it's just phenomenal. And I know it's a huge expense and everything, but it just seems like in the NFL where you can just print money, why wouldn't you take that extra step to make your players happy?
I don't know. That's a weird one. All right. Take Two is brought to you by Swedish Cyberknife. Treat prostate cancer with Swedish Cyberknife. Swedish.org/cyberknife-prostate. Coming up, it's the position group that makes or breaks a team's future. We're going to continue our draft profiles. Take a look at this position. Coming up next with Wyman and Bob, this is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
We are just a couple of days away from the NFL draft. We've been breaking down position groups, taking a look at some potential candidates for the Seahawks at different position groups. Now, this is a position group which is the most important of, and maybe all of sports, the quarterback.
Yeah.
And even though they made the deal to bring in a backup to Geno and maybe, you know, maybe he's the future. Who knows? They brought in some quarterbacks to talk to. We know they brought in Bo Nix. We know they brought in Spencer Rattler. And you took a look at both these guys.
Yeah, and that was your idea, which is a good one. And I'm just curious if Bo Nix is going to be there when the Seahawks get to 16. I don't know that they necessarily think that he is he's the greatest, but I feel like he's in the mix. That's why they brought him in. Again, they didn't bring in Penix because they pretty much know everything about him because of Ryan Grubb.
And they went to his pro day.
Yeah. Yeah, they were there. And I think that was one of the days that we interviewed John. So, but yeah, you look at Bo Nix, 6'2", 215. He's a grown man. He's 24 years old. Guy played in like 61 college football games. So, but he goes, you know, first to Auburn, and he gets named the starter as a true freshman at Auburn. And had a decent year, but then, you know, things got in 21 got kind of miserable for him. He didn't like the coach there, apparently. That's at least what it sounded like, that he wasn't super happy with him. So he got frustrated and entered the portal and goes to Oregon. But man, you look at what he did last year. Number two in the nation with yardage, 4508 behind Penix. Number one in touchdowns at 45. And then he only had 3 interceptions.
That's pretty amazing. He put the ball up how many times? 470 times he put that ball in the air.
Yeah.
3 picks.
And he was 77% completion percentage. And then the other thing about him is that somebody did some kind of a adjusted percentage based on like drops and things that weren't his fault. And they had him at 85%. So, yeah, and I mean, he's got a couple of good receivers, Tez Johnson and Troy Franklin, that both went over 1,000 yards. And Troy Franklin had 14 touchdowns. Tez Johnson had 10 touchdowns. So, yeah, I mean, he makes every throw. It's pretty amazing. His feet are really good. He makes lots of off-scheduled throws, kind of like Penix. And, but, yeah, I mean, he's projected in the second round. I don't think he's going to be there.
Well, how do you think it would go over? Seahawks are sitting there at 16, and you got Bo Nix is still there and Penix is still there, and they take Bo Nix.
Yeah.
How do you think Husky Nation around here would respond to that?
Yeah, I don't think people would be happy about that. I know that there's a big hatred for the Ducks, that's for sure.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, you look at this guy, he's just had success the entire way, and I know, something like over 100 touchdowns, 26 interceptions. Like I said, he's married. He's a grown man. He's 24 years old. The Auburn coach was a guy named Brian Harsin, and that's who he kind of got sideways with. It said he was miserable there. Hmm. And then he ends up getting hurt, so that's why he transferred to Oregon. But, yeah, when you look at all of the things that he does, he can pretty much do everything. He's not like super fast. I didn't see a 40 time from him, but I was looking at how he threw at the combine, and he looked good. Guy has huge hands, if you're into that kind of thing.
It's like, well, it's not my kink, but you know, yeah. Everybody's got a different thing.
Because mine, I think, are like 9 7/8. Well, I'm a linebacker and 240 pounds, and his is like 10 1/8. So, yeah, I mean, he's got big hands. He's got all the tools, in other words. So, yeah, he really is he's a really good, solid player. Now, here's the only criticism. So he was only sacked 5 times last year at Oregon. So, you know, we talked about that Jackson Powers kid, the center, you know, from Oregon that we were talking about the other day. And, you know, he's the center there, obviously, Jackson Powers Johnson. And then, you know, like I said, he had Troy Franklin and Tez Johnson. I mean, he's got some good guys around him. And one of the scouts' comments was, what's it going to be like, you know, with when he doesn't have that Oregon offense around him, all those pieces and everything? It was, I don't want to say it was easy, mm-hmm. but I mean, they had a lot of good pieces. And, you know, what's it going to be like when things get uncomfortable? Because when you look at this guy, again, 61 games that he played, and he's had a ton of success. How's he handle the hard parts of it?
Yeah. All right. Number two here, another guy they brought in, and I've seen him kind of consistently in the mid round in terms of the mocks. Again, means nothing. He could go much earlier or much later, but Spencer Rattler.
Yeah. I was looking at Spencer, and here's what the quote was on him, is that he was everybody's mid round favorite. You know, he's a projection of a 4th round guy. And so I automatically start thinking about Russell Wilson. There's kind of some similarities. The only thing I would say, though, is that Russ is faster. Rattler, not. And he's got 4.95 speed. Like I said, I didn't even see what Bo Nix's 40 was, but 4.95. But he's a creative runner. Mm-hmm. So, but he doesn't have blazing speed. He can make all of the throws. The one sort of knock also at the combine, he had a tough time with the deep balls. He had like 6 or 7 shots, and I think maybe one of them, you know, mm-hmm. when he got a chance to get out there. But here's what's interesting. So he's also a transfer portal guy. And again, 4th round projection, but he was at Oklahoma for 3 years. He got beat out by Caleb Williams, who's going to be the number 1 pick. So he transfers to South Carolina for the 22 and 23 season. Now, I don't know when this happened, but he ended up being the captain for the team, and he just got there. And that was the same thing that happened with Russ when he went from NC State to Wisconsin right after spring training, they named him the captain just mm-hmm. because of his leadership. So similar type of guy in that regard.
Do you have his completion percentage there?
Yeah, 68%.
Okay.
77.
When you're talking about him missing on the deep ball, I'm just wondering what they asked him to do there, if they were a team that were, you know, stretching the field on a rare occasion, or if they did it all the time.
I just think it was nerves. I mean, I looked at him just, I mean, he's out there in his underwear, right? It's at the combine, and, you know, he's just chucking long balls. And we all know that Russ, phenomenal, long ball thrower. So, yeah, I projected in the fourth round, and I just thought, yeah, that would be cool if they could get a guy like that who's a project. I mean, you look at Kirk Cousins was drafted in the fourth round, Russell Wilson the third, obviously. So he had five games where he threw over 300 yards. His rushing yards aren't super impressive. Same period of time, he ran for 400 yards. Russ ran for 1421. So Russ is a much more dynamic runner. But this guy looks like, you know, and he has some really good. I just mentioned this guy, Xavier Leggett. I think it's Leggett. 6'1", 220 pounds. And he's just incredibly explosive, the receiver that they have at South Carolina. So ran a 4.39 40, and he's in the mix to get drafted, but kind of reminded me of Anquan Boldin. So, yeah, he's got some guys that can get loose deep. And he had no problem throwing deep balls during the game. So I don't know why that happened to him at the combine, but it wasn't one of those things. Like C.J. Stroud, when he went to the combine last year, he pretty much proved to everyone on every throw, this is who I am. I'm the, you know, second pick in the draft or whatever he was. So
yeah, the Panthers still said, nah, we'll go with the other guy.
Yeah, yeah. So yeah, it's kind of interesting looking at. I would not be against them taking a fourth round, and you know, or even a third round, and getting Spencer Rattler again. If you can solve your quarterback problem, and is ours solved, would you say? That would be the question I would ask with Geno. Is it, I would say not 100%. I mean, mm-hmm. a couple of years ago, you would have said, yeah, I think so. Last year, you'd be like, maybe a step back. And he's getting on in age. And is this a solution that's like for the next 10 to 12 years?
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't look at that spot as a problem currently. I think Geno's, you know, more than adequate to fill it right now. But you're looking at, all right, what's going to happen beyond this season? Right. That becomes the question with how much money he's going to be owed versus what his production may or may not be. So we'll see what he looks like this year. But, yeah, it'd be interesting if they took a, you know, Spencer Rattler or any other of these quarterbacks that are considered the second tier, if you will, in the later rounds. All right, coming up, Mariners will not be able to win a series against the Rangers without this one thing happening. We'll get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.
Wyman and Bob.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
On Seattle Sports and the Seattle Sports app.
Mariners getting set to take on the Texas Rangers. They are in Texas. Game one coming your way. We will turn you over to the pregame show coming up at 4 p.m. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But is this, we talked yesterday about so many good things happened with this team. They took two of three. They won two series in a row. They took two of three from the Colorado Rockies. Should have been three, but all right, you won the series on the road. I'll take that. But you saw offense starting to come to life, different guys starting to step up. And we talked about Julio Rodriguez, and he's got a six-game hitting streak going. In those six games, he's got 13 hits. He raised his average. He was below 200 going into the Red Series. He's now got the highest average on the team, I believe, for a guy who's playing every day. He's hitting 276. Yet we talked about the power, the damage hasn't been there. Of those 13 hits, 11 were singles. He had two doubles, has yet to hit a home run. So you wonder, okay, can they continue at this pace without him producing in the way of damage, driving in runs, you know, extra bases, things like that. And you know, I don't know that anybody's concerned. I love that he's hitting the ball. I love that he's going the other way with it, that he's squaring some of these balls up. He's hitting them hard, yeah, and not leaving the yard. But we talked to John Morosi yesterday, and he said, you know, basically he's not concerned about the lack of power at this particular moment. Looks like he's ultimately, there's a positive that he's just turning into a better overall hitter.
We forget sometimes he was batting 204 with a 376 slug as of May 21st. So take today and basically project forward a month, and he was batting 204 at that point in time last year. And he rebounded to go 30-30 with 100 RBI. I am the opposite of worried with respect to this development of him hitting singles and making more contact the last week or so. I look at this as he is now adding another club to his bag and his ability to hit the ball the other way, drive and runs with singles. If you take Julio's already amazing skill set, the ability that he has, and you add to that skill set Justin Turner-esque ability to know how to hit the ball the other way and hit it where it's pitched. And then, yeah, when the pitcher makes a mistake and it's over the heart of the plate, it's pulled for a home run to Edgar's Cantina, great. I look at it as he's developing into a more well-rounded hitter.
See how he throws Edgar's Cantina in there? Showing his familiarity with T-Mobile Park.
He's amazing, man. I'm sorry. I know he's got... I feel like he probably knows the name of every pub at every ballpark.
Yeah. He's giving us restaurant names out there and for the Hall of Fame.
So he's amazing. Also, very consistent character. I mean, I see him on MLB Central all the time, and he's the same guy. I'm like, there he is. That's our JP.
And, of course, he looks at what's happening as a positive. Another club in his bag. He's
I like that.
And I see that. That makes perfect sense that, hey, this is a guy who's not getting over anxious. Yeah, there's always going to be swing and miss in his game. He's going to be a guy who strikes out. I'm not going to get upset about his strikeouts. He'd like to cut it down, but it's going to be part of who he is because he's an aggressive hitter. Yeah. But even often aggressive hitters, you see them trying to yank everything. They're trying to pull everything. Even if it's low and away, they're rolling over on it because they're trying to pull it. He hasn't been doing that. He's taking it the opposite way when depending on where the ball's pitched. And he seems to be content. All right, I'll take these base hits. And the ball will leave the yard. There's no doubt about that. And I think everybody, whether you've heard Blauer say it, whether you heard Morosi say it, anybody say it, as soon as he hits one, you know they're going to come in bunches. It's sort of like getting that weight off his shoulders, like, all right. And I thought it was going to happen against the Reds. And I certainly thought it was going to happen against the Rockies in that thin air up there. I think it's going to happen here, Dave. I'm just going to keep saying every next series. It's going it's going to happen in Texas.
Well, because it is, number one. But, I mean, look, the other thing is, I mean, what if you replace some of those singles, three or four of those singles with strikeouts? I mean, it'd be devastating. And then because you do see him chasing.
Yeah.
But, you know, lately it seems like there's a little bit less of that. And then, you know, just the ability to take what they give you. Because, look, the pitchers are aware of his power, right? And they're not going to feed him anything too ridiculous down the middle of the pipe there. So I feel like, it does kind of sound like we're making it positive for him. Like, okay, adding another. I mean, that's another way to look at it. But I do believe it. I believe that is like adding another club to your bag. I mean, he's learning how to take what they give him. And, you know, he's not trying to do too much with those pitches that he's been facing right now. And again, the opposing pitchers, they know that he's got the power. So, yeah, I think it is just a matter of time. It's just, I don't know. Is it going to be this weekend?
Yeah.
It's going to be this week, I should say.
Yeah, it's going to happen in Texas, Dave.
All right.
I'm certain eventually I'm going to be like other people making the same predictions year in, year out. Like eventually you're right and you can go, see?
Eventually Tom Brady is going to get too old.
That's right.
And he can't throw anymore.
See, told you, Dave. He's too old to play. It
happened. We had somebody I'm familiar with that would talk about that.
Year after all the year time. After year. Like eventually that will be true. Yes.
Yeah. So. But I mean, look, maybe he inherits Kyle Seager's ability to hit home runs in that building. So
the other side of that is, yeah, it's great to see 13 hits in six games. You love seeing that. The opposition's probably going, hey, I like that too. We're keeping him in the yard. Mm-hmm. We're keeping him. If we hold Julio Rodriguez to a single, even a double, okay, he didn't leave the yard. That's a win. If you're the opposition out there, you're going to make, you know, the other guys in that lineup beat you. You're going to make JP beat you, make Rojas beat you, make anybody else. You know what you're doing. It's like letting Otani beat you. You know what that guy can do to you. You do everything you can to limit that damage. And Julio's that guy on this team, even if he hasn't hit the home run yet, you still go in. He would be what you would call the extra meeting guy.
Yeah.
All right. You know how to pitch him. We're going to bust him up and in early. Then we're going to go off speed low and away and hope he chases. All right, if he hits a flare, he's on first base. We can live with that.
Yeah. I just thought that Cincinnati series was such a launching point. And for him, you know, he's very quietly gets two doubles in the last game where they won 5-1. And, you know, that's really all he has done. And it's just a matter of time. What did you say it was? Game number four last year when he hit his first home run?
Yeah. I think at this point last year, after 22 games, I looked yesterday, I have to look again. I think he had four home runs. So he wasn't mashing it. He wasn't, you know, home run every other game. But his first one was in the fourth game. And then I believe at this point, after 22 games, he had four.
So, well, and you have to, his physical presence too, man. I mean, we had him out there. I just marvel over how huge he is.
He's a big dude.
6'3", a solid. I mean, he looks like a tight end or a defensive end in the NFL. And he's got the power, so it's just a matter of time. I like that he's slapping the singles.
Well, and he doesn't appear frustrated, which I like. Yeah. You're like, okay, hit a single. I'm on base. Now I'm going to create a problem. I'm going to steal second here. You know, he can be problematic. So, it'd be different if you saw him like he was just, I'm trying to hit this ball out of the yard. Yeah, you see some swings that look like he's going for the five-run home run. He's just swinging out of his shoes, but he seems to be limiting that and going with it. And I think it's going to be a matter of time. Maybe it happens tonight. First home run of the season.
Well, you already said it's going to happen, so I guess it is.
In this series, yeah. Okay. In this series. All right, coming up, there's a big debate playing out about two edge rushers, and the Seahawks might be faced with that choice on Thursday. We're going to get into that next with Wyman and Bob. This is Seattle Sports on 710.